And that revolution started, that message began with a little baby in a manger. That's radical stuff. That God himself would come into the story, into the middle of the mess, symbolized in the cattle stall, of the manger itself. It's just revolutionary. Now, you might be thinking, wow, a lot of what we talk about when we sort of celebrate Christmas is not so sort of big and bold. Like, what about the peace on earth part, the silent night, the sweet little 8-pound baby Jesus on the hay? What about that part of the story? And so much, I think, of what we try to do when we're trying to celebrate Christmas is trying to create that moment, that sweet, tender moment. It's just a little of that goes a long way. I think of a few times that's happened for me, and you probably can too. I remember being about 8 years old and coming down the stairs in the middle of the night because I just couldn't wait, and the tree was all lit up, and there were presents under the tree, and we used to wrap fruit in cellophane, like fruit baskets in cellophane. Does anybody still do that, or is that like a thing a long time ago that country people did? And the lights were hitting it just right. It was just all shiny, and it was just like, whoa! And I remember that so well from my childhood. Or I remember just a few years ago at the Christmas Eve service that we mentioned, and we do the candlelight lighting and sing Silent Night. And this was at the 7 o'clock service at the Greenwood campus. And when we began that service, it was just maybe it had just started flurrying a little bit. And what we didn't know is as soon as we closed the doors, it just started snowing like crazy. And when we opened the doors back up after just that hour, it was like the whole world had changed. There was snow everywhere. And that, you know, that silence, that deadening silence, it was just like this really sweet, sweet moment. It was the time when I was in sort of middle school, and it snowed on Christmas Day, and we went rabbit hunting with my papaw and shot 25 that day. That was a sweet moment too. It wasn't quite the still, quiet moment, but it's pretty awesome. I remember that pretty well, too. There were like 5 of us, so it was legal. I'm just saying it was great. Great day. What I've learned about those moments is that sometimes they come and sometimes they don't. What I'm learning about those moments is that you can't force it, right? We're not in charge of that. I'm also learning that Christmas isn't just about that. That sweet silent moment that we sort of have this expectation of that might come or might not. I think sometimes our unmet expectations of Christmas are just trying to force that or create that. And there's nothing wrong with that moment, but it's not just about that, because Christmas is also about a revolution. And that's where our focus is for this Advent, in our waiting before Christmas this year. We're pointing to and trying to bring our attention to the radical revolutionary part of the story that is also there. And I think we miss that part trying to create the warm fuzzy sometimes. I think also maybe this radical revolutionary part is the thing we need maybe even more than the warm fuzzy feeling, as great as it is. And so in these days of Advent, in the waiting before Christmas, we're focusing on 8 revolutionary words that come from the message of the angels to the shepherds. Fear not, I bring you good news of great joy for all people. And what I think we find, you know, sort of anytime an angel says something, you ought to pay attention. But I think what we find as we listen to those words, even now, that there is a revolution in them. The revolution of Jesus that we sometimes think of when we think of Easter and the overcoming of death itself. What we find is that that story begins now in the incarnation, in the Christmas story. Fear not, I bring you good news of great joy for all people. And we can barely imagine the scene as the skies literally open up and the armies of heaven begin to sing the praises of God, and the shepherds, these sort of goat herder, backwoods, backward, dirty, grimy, sort of gritty guys stand there like this. Can you imagine the scene? As just for maybe a moment, it's like the full majesty of heaven is pinpointed to one spot on earth. And this message of glory is given to shepherds. That's pretty upside down, isn't it? It's pretty unexpected. Maybe that revolution is there. We just need to see it. Because sometimes God does speak in those peace-filled moments. Yes, there's the part of the Christmas story where they sort of stand around the manger and it's still and it's quiet. God does speak sometimes through a still, small voice. But sometimes God thunders with revolution. And that story's in the Christmas story as well. And in this moment, God thunders. Just for a moment, the heavens open up, and then just as quickly, nothing but silence. And all that's left is a few shepherds with their hair blown back. It's to these people that God proclaims the message through these angels. These people who are kind of accustomed to some bad news, that this story is going to be about good news. And those are the words we're going to focus on today. Good news. The shepherds in the Christmas story represent those who don't typically believe good news. They're sort of the people that get the bum deal in life. The people who the systems of the world sort of just don't work out for them. And the people who are the poorest, the most uneducated, the stinkiest, Mike Rowe would show up at their place with a little story about a dirty job. Shepherds were nomadic cowboys, lonely and transient, singing around the campfire of sad songs, sleeping on the ground, dirty, gritty, and not easily impressed. Good news, yeah, right. We're not so sure about that. Think about it. I did a little research. Just sort of the quality of life for people in the ancient world is something that we have a hard time getting our heads around. Those of us who benefit from all kinds of modern convenience, not to mention things like medicine and doctors and good nutrition. The shepherds are the lowest of the low and people who already live sort of a rough life. The average age of people in the time of Jesus, you want to guess what that is? 35. I thought we might do a little experiment of have everybody who's 35 and up stand up, but I'm not going to do that today. Let's tweak this a little bit. Infant mortality was high, right? So if you kind of take that out of the equation, then the average age of people in the time of Jesus goes up quite a bit, up to age 47. So that's what I'm going to do. If you're 47 or older, please stand. No, I'm not going to do that either. But it's not very long, is it? It's a rough life already, and the shepherds are out there on the ground roughing it and dealing with injury and illness, wild animals, and they have a rough life. They're the people who just sort of don't expect anything to get better. They represent the kind of folk who kind of know this is just how it is, and it doesn't change. And it's to these folk that the shepherds open up the heavens with a message of good news. To the people not easily impressed, the angel says, I bring you good news. Into the dirt and grime and goat stink, glory. That's just revolutionary. Good news to poor people. Jesus would later take up that idea, wouldn't he, in Luke 4, as he begins to proclaim what he's here to do, as he stands up in front of everybody and sort of outs his mission. He says, the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, for he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. That revolution in Jesus starts in the revolution of the manger. It starts in the message of the angels. It's already begun as the glory of heaven was opened up to some night shift shepherds. Good news. Maybe God figured that if he could impress the shepherds, he could impress anybody. Maybe the deal is that if this is going to be good news for anybody, it's going to have to be good news for everybody. Maybe God wants us to believe that good news is possible, even when we tend to see bad news all around us. The shepherds certainly represent people who think that everywhere you look, it's just sort of bad news. Some may say all that glory was wasted on a few backward farmers. But maybe that was the point. Maybe this is going to be that kind of story, a revolution in the way we understand how God works and what God is doing in the world. And that would, I think, be good news, wouldn't it? Let's be honest. These days, even believing that good news is possible is sort of a revolution, isn't it? we represent people who are a little bit skeptical about any good news. It made me think of this joke. A doctor comes into the patient and says, I have good news and bad news. And you've kind of gotten this framework in your life, the good news, bad news scenario. And the patient says, well, I'll take the good news first. And the doctor says, you have 24 hours to live. The patient's like, good news? What's good about that? If that's the good news, what's the bad news? And the doctor says, we've been trying to call you since yesterday. It's not really good news, is it? We don't tend to believe good news. And you watch the actual news and you might get the same impression. There's not a lot of good news out there. It seems like the news around us is mostly bad. And people these days are asking, is it better than it used to be? Is it worse than it used to be? Maybe it's always been this way. One thing that I think has changed is the availability of bad news is more prevalent than ever. Johnny Cash wrote a song about that. Sort of tells you the kind of song that it is. A song called Bad News. Does anybody know this song? Same people who are 47 and nobody. Okay. This is the way the song begins. Well, bad news travels like wildfire. Good news travels slow. I sometimes wonder if one of our problems, or maybe one of the great sources of our anxiety today, is that we have found many ways for bad news to travel like wildfire, and good news still travels slow. We wake up in the morning most days to check our phones to see if the world's still there, or if something bad has happened. Another artist, not often quoted in sermons, wrote a song called Bad News. Kanye West, I don't know how many of you are fans, has a song called Bad News, and it's about how relationships don't always turn out like you want. The going thought is that this is a song about a girlfriend cheating on him, and that it might be autobiographical, but I don't really care. And there's a line in that song that says, didn't you know I was waiting on you, waiting on a dream that will never come true? It's easy to come to relationships with that same skepticism, isn't it? That good news is sort of maybe possible, but there's always bad news on its tail. And that whenever something good happens, there's another shoe that's going to drop. The truth is, neuroscience is teaching us that we're super focused on the negative. This is just how our brains are wired, to pick up on bad news and remember it, and to forget good news even if we hear it. Some of you remember another song. This is my last song reference. From the TV show Hee Haw. Gloom, despair, and agony on me. Deep, dark depression, excessive misery. If it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Gloom, despair, and agony on me. If we're not careful, that's how we go about life. That's what we expect to see when we pick up our phone or when we turn on the television. You didn't think you were going to hear that song today, did you? Hee-haw. To sort of go through life with that expectation that there's just a lot of bad news out there. And if we're not careful, we can sort of like become like the character from Winnie the Pooh, Eeyore. One time, someone delivered Eeyore some bad news, and he replied, well, could be worse. Not sure how, but it could be. Could it be that the media has turned us into a society of Eeyores? Could be worse. Not sure how, but it could be. We're tempted to look at the world that way, aren't we? And that temptation is strong. I was thinking about how bad news is delivered these days, and realized that at least twice in the last year, the news of a tragic death of someone I know and loved was delivered to me through a text. One time I was sitting at Cracker Barrel and a text came up and I had to go to the bathroom. I had to go someplace. One time I was finishing up at the gym and got into the locker room and looked at my phone and the world came crashing down. It's just easy to be overcome by that. And in some real ways, not just from a sort of look on the bright side of your life. I mean, there are times, and we feel this tension at Christmas, where that just doesn't work. And the warm, fuzzy people who are chipper often will do more damage than good if they're not careful for those who are experiencing real loss and grief. That warm, fuzzy, bright side of life kind of perspective doesn't help us when we need to grieve, when we need to acknowledge loss, and when that is us being authentic, when that's our truth. This Christmas, we're trying to acknowledge that in a different way. On next Sunday night at 6 p.m. at the Greenwood campus, we're having a service called When Christmas Hurts. You might recognize the idea of Blue Christmas is sometimes what it's called. Pastor Wayne and Megan Davidson on our staff went out and did a little interview on WBKO on Friday about this, and I was so proud of them because I felt like it was such a witness to people who might be watching who don't go to our church and maybe don't go to any church. Just the honesty of acknowledging loss and providing a place for people to acknowledge that together. We're going to have a service for that next Sunday night at 6 p.m. at Greenwood. And Pastor Wayne said, you know, it really is not so much about finding comfort as connection. And I resonate with that, that we need to connect to people who also just are able to be truthful about what they're going through. And also, he said something that resonated with me, as he often does. Pastor Wayne was the hospice chaplain for 10 years, and so he just brings this healing presence with him wherever he goes. And he said, you know, there's a part of this grief journey that you just have to acknowledge and go through. You can't just skip over it. And if the message of Christmas is just kind of get over it, then that doesn't help anybody. That's not revolutionary. So maybe that's you in the midst of real loss that we need to acknowledge. But I think for all of us, we might do well to realize that this is the story of God. That God keeps delivering good news to people who have experienced real, actual, honest-to-goodness bad news. Sarah, who was unable to have children, and year after year after year after year, nothing but barrenness until it was too late, except that it wasn't. Or David, who goes up against the unbeatable Goliath that nobody wants to tackle, and he cannot be stopped except that he was. Or Jesus, on the darkest night of his life in the Garden of Gethsemane, as the soldiers are coming and the bad news is just closing in. You might remember that Peter grabs a sword in one of the Gospels and chops off an ear in that moment, and Jesus says, stop, put your sword away. This is not what this is about. And then you remember what he says? He says, don't you know that I could call on my Father and he would send 12 legions of angels in this moment if that's what was required? Angels, 12 legions, armies of angels. Jesus believed the good news that those same angels had proclaimed to shepherds all those years before. That God was in the midst of this. God was at work. And that God knows about the bad news. And yet, Jesus believed that this was a story of good news. A story of redemptive grace at work in real, actual people's lives. And so today, as we come again to Advent and the preparation and the waiting before Christmas, I invite you simply to believe that good news is possible. To the revolutionary act that good news is at work in every case of bad news that you will ever hear. And to find a framework for life out of that. If we're going to believe good news, then we ought to know what it is. Father Richard Rohr does a great summary of the Christmas story in two short phrases. This is the good news. God is not elsewhere and heaven's not later. He frames those in the negative, by the way, which I think is really helpful for those of us who experience the negative bad news. God's not elsewhere and heaven's not later. The good news of Christmas is what may still be the most revolutionary claim of all, that God is with us, that we're not alone, that Jesus is our Emmanuel. God in the flesh. The Word has become flesh and lives among us. And that's the very thing that we needed. The picture I'm going to put on the screen is of Kyrie and Brielle Jackson. They were born in 1995 Massachusetts, at Massachusetts Memorial Hospital. At birth, they each weighed about 2 pounds each, so 4 pounds together. Just over 4 pounds together. And the twin on our left, Kyrie, was the stronger of the twins and relatively speaking, did well. Brielle, the twin on our right, was not doing as well. She cried continually. That kept bringing her blood oxygen down. She could not be calmed, and she just wasn't doing well at all. They began to prepare themselves for the reality that she might not make it. And the news wasn't looking good. One day, Brielle was having a particularly bad day, and nothing would calm her. And so her nurse tried everything she could do. The NICU nurse, her name was Gail Kasparian, got an idea. She had heard of this technique in Europe where these babies needed some flesh-on-flesh contact. And so these two babies that had been in separate incubators, and sort of that was the protocol, they took a risk. And they put Brielle into the incubator with her sister. And I looked this up on Snopes because it's one of those stories that, like, is it really, really true? And, you know, they're super skeptical. Snopes is used to a lot of bad news and a lot of, you know, lies, honestly. And they're like, believe it or not, this story's true. Almost instantly, Brielle calmed down. She stopped crying. Her blood oxygen saturation went up. And 6 weeks later, she went home. Those twins, if you want to do the math, are 22 years old now. And that story has been now dubbed the rescue hug. The key to the technique now called the kangaroo procedure, which is practiced more widely now, the key is skin-to-skin contact, flesh on flesh. The very thing we all need. This is, of course, a story about all of us. It's the story of the incarnation. It's the story of the gospel. It's the good news that God himself became flesh and came and lived with us and laughed with us and cried with us and lived our life and died our death. God is not elsewhere. And with that, heaven is not later. God is showing up in the present with actual good news to people who know about bad news, and the shepherds represent that. One of the great revolutions in the story of Christmas is that the shepherds believed it. They believed the message just as the angels had said, this is good news. And they got up and they went and started looking for this baby in a manger. And I think that might just be the revolution of Christmas. People like us who might otherwise be skeptical, people who might be, who might represent those who kind of life doesn't work out for, are the very first people who get up and say, okay, let's go looking for the good news. Let's go find the baby in the manger, so to speak. Let's go see where God is at work. The revolution of Christmas has always been people who hear that this is good news and believe it, trust it, and begin to act out of it. And when they do, the revolution of Jesus continues. To people who hear bad news all around them, who hear the story of death and destruction, division and degradation, they act differently. Instead of wringing their hands, instead of complaining and griping, which I know none of you do, instead of blaming or finger pointing, what they do is what Jesus did. They let the light of God shine into darkness. They pray in hope over long periods of time. They speak peace when all around them is hate. They refuse to return evil for evil. They push against the systems of violence and greed and lust and destruction and say, no, that bad news story is not the real story. And they begin to walk into a different story. They serve the least of these. They believe the good news. And they, in that way, become part of it. This Christmas, I want to invite you to become part of the good news, which begins by simply trusting that it's possible, and then to walk into it, to act out of it, to hear these words as revolutionary words. Yes, sweet, yes, kind, yes, tender, but also powerful and world-shaping and world-changing. Revolutionary words like, he is not here, he is risen. Revolutionary words like, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son. and revolutionary words like fear not, I bring you good news of great joy for all people. Let's pray. God, we confess that we've believed that this is a story about bad news winning out. We might suggest that a sky full of angels would be helpful, might help us remember. But then again, that's just how we think. Help us to believe that you bring us good news. News that's more than just looking on the bright side. News that's more than just try to create a warm, fuzzy feeling for a little bit. News that's far less than escape, much more than an escape from this world. News that begins with you coming into this world and starting something new. Help us to see that newness, that possibility, your grace at work around us. And help us to, like shepherds, take steps into that, acting out of our trust, acting out of our belief. And God, at this Christmas, help us wherever we find ourselves, in whatever phase of life, stage of life, whatever course of events and family realities. Help us to see that your good news is breaking in every way, every time, every place. So that we might come to Jesus and find him giving us exactly what we need. The word who became flesh and who dwelt among us. For we make our prayer in his name.